Well, go ahead and be turning in your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 31. Proverbs chapter 31. When you're invited to be a part of a study like this, it's humbling, it's an honor, and it is, a lot of times when it's already been laid out for you, it's a matter of maybe things fitting into your schedule. And you know, the idea of standing up here before you and talking about Proverbs 31, it just seems like such an important passage, something that maybe could be handled better by someone else, but I'm going to certainly do my best this evening to proclaim the truth and declare it as we look at the Proverbs together. I'd like to consider maybe a few observations with you as we begin. First of all, we often hear about men dominating the culture, dominating history, and maybe in the past even more so, there might have been some truth to that. Often we hear that complaint today, though, that men are dominating the culture and dominating history. It's pretty remarkable to me to know that in a world that is supposedly a man's world, the people of God have always recognized the value of godly women. And that's what Proverbs 31 is about primarily. It's about a mother speaking to her son about the advantages and the necessity of a godly wife. And the people of God have known about the importance of the kind of women that are in their homes, that are in their communities, and the impact that such women can have on those communities and on the world in general. So I think that's one observation that I always just find fascinating when I see passages that fly in the face of the accusation of chauvinism in the Bible or male domination. Another observation, kind of as we begin, to me it seems at least a bit ironic that the most memorable chapter of Proverbs, and really almost seems to kind of intentionally serve as a climax to the book, it's ironic to me that the most memorable chapter is about the importance of godly wives. Why is that ironic to me? Well, because one of the most, I guess, well-known writers of Proverbs and one of the most prolific writers of Proverbs, Solomon, was a man that made a lot of bad choices about the women who were in his life. And if you go to the early parts of Proverbs, especially the first 9 chapters, as you see Solomon speaking to his son, he writes a lot about the dangers of fooling around with immoral women. And so, to me, I ask myself and I wonder, maybe we can't know the answer to this question, but it's at least an observation and maybe a question to begin the study thinking, was it really possible that maybe what Solomon said was influenced by his own failures, the things that he said to his son? Or did he write these things to his son and then turn and value the wrong kinds of things in a wife and reap the consequences for it? I don't know if the placement of Proverbs 31 is a matter of divine placement. The chronicles, those who are, I guess, what you might, the catalogers who are working to put the Proverbs together, I don't know if they were inspired to put Proverbs 31 last or if it was just pragmatic and practical. Having seen the failures of Solomon and seen what the wrong kind of women in his life did to him, they really wanted that to be maybe a highlighted statement in the book that they were putting together. Whatever we decide about that doesn't matter too much, because one thing we know for sure, that the Scripture consistently bears out that the foundation of all social constructs is the home. The foundation of our churches is the home. What do I mean by that? What happens in the church begins in the home. And when things are going well in the churches, it's because they're going well in the homes. And if they're not, they're not going to be going well in the churches for very long. things aren't going to be going well in the community for very long if they're going bad in the home. And things aren't going to be going well in the nation for very long if things aren't going right in the home. It is the foundation of those social constructs and those relationships. And the choices that we make in our homes will reverberate outwardly. So when things are good in the home, it will begin to be seen in churches. It will begin to be seen in communities. It will begin to be seen maybe as far in the nation as a whole if there is much discipline generally in the homes of a nation and of a people. And so, obviously, the decision of who we're going to marry and what we think about ourselves even as we prepare for that, obviously that's a big decision. And it's an important decision. And it was so important to King Lemuel's mother that she went out of her way to speak to him at length about the kind of woman that he would look for in a wife. I'm going to begin maybe just by talking about the first nine verses, and really maybe the first, the verse 10 begins what I believe is a fourth point of emphasis several points of advice that are going to be offered, and it's the major point of emphasis. But there are some other things that are offered, and we'll just kind of look at them briefly before we get into beginning in verse 10, verses 10 through 31. But the first thing that King Lemuel's mother says to him is she warns him to abstain from unrestrained lust, it seems to me. A little bit different than talking specifically about the kind of wife that he would choose. It says, the words of King Lemuel, the utterance which his mother taught him. What, my son? And what, son of my womb? And what, son of my vows? Do not give your strength to women, nor your ways to that which destroys kings. You see those questions in verse 2, it's almost like maybe a little bit of a hesitation, where maybe a mother is talking to her adult son, and he's the son of her womb, the son of her vows. She prayed to the Lord for this son, and she has been praying for this son through the years that he might remain faithful. And he's an adult now, and he's got to make his own choices. So maybe that's the hesitation, but at the same time, she feels obligated to say what she's about to say to him. She's not going to try to make his decisions for him, but she's going to warn him about valuing the wrong things in women, whether he wants to hear it or not. And as our children get to be adults, you know, we do kind of, our place, our authority in their lives diminishes. But at the same time, there's a place for us, I believe, to say things by way of advice, by way of counsel, maybe even things that are uncomfortable. And we say those things because we realize the devastating consequences, perhaps, of making the wrong choice. And so we keep our place. We don't try to extend our authority as parents into the lives of our adult children. But at the same time, if we see something amiss, we're going to speak about it, even if it's a little bit uncomfortable. And so she says to her son, do not give your strength to women. Don't be the kind of person that lives for lust. And don't be the kind of person that associates with those kind of people. I also would make this observation. Proverbs 31 is the standard set by an inspired woman. You know, as we look through Proverbs 31, we kind of see pretty high standard, a pretty high mark set for women and for wives. And this is not some man coming up with some pie-in-the-sky standard to impose upon women. It's interesting for us to think about the fact that this is a woman thinking about the kind of wife that she would like for her son. This made me think of the tension sometimes that can exist between mothers and the wives of their sons. This can be a great relationship, the daughter-in-law and the mother. But I think probably mercy needs to flow in both directions. There needs to be some understanding going both ways. Both those who are younger and those who are older can lose touch with one another. You know, the young wife needs to realize and respect the fact that here is a woman who is spent her life raising and putting her time into this son, spent her life praying for this son that he would be faithful. And so we ought to expect that she's going to be interested in his life and what kind of woman he chooses to marry. And I think at the same time, maybe the older women need to realize where they were when they were younger in their lives and how far they came. That what we're going to look at, I think, in Proverbs 31 is a lifetime of work. We're not looking at a typical day for the virtuous wife. We're looking at something, I believe, that's describing a lifetime of work. And so the relationship can be good. And hopefully with some mercy and some understanding, younger women and older women can cultivate these kind of relationships, particularly mothers with daughters-in-law, so that you know your son and the young family can have the best chance and have opportunities to hear wisdom and advice while at the same time being respected as adults. And so, you know, younger women cultivating these kind of relationships and older women listening to one another, both groups listening to one another with mercy. The second warning that is offered is a warning to abstain from strong drink. And we'll just talk about this briefly. It's not our main point of emphasis, but King Lemuel's mother did insert this here, and so we'll take just some time to reflect on it. She says, "It's not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes intoxicating drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the justice of all the afflicted. Give strong drink to him who is perishing, and wine to those who are bitter of heart. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more." The basic point to take away from what she is saying, I believe, is this. Alcohol is not for people who care about justice, who care about the law. Alcohol lowers our inhibitions. Alcohol hinders restraint. The thing that she has just talked about previously in verse 3, don't give your strength to women. Alcohol is the very thing that will hinder that restraint, that will cause us perhaps to be more likely to give in to our lusts. Alcohol is something that probably is going to hinder the thought process in which we look at situations and we try to do what is best for others rather than seeking our own self-interests. And so the simple point to take away from this is that alcohol is not for people who care about justice and who care about the law, particularly a king in a position, you know, exercising and executing the laws and carrying them out and enforcing them, needed to be aware of that. I would say that if we're looking for permission to drink alcohol recreationally, we don't find it in this passage. You notice that this is describing alcohol that is used as a medicine to dull the pain of emotional trauma or imminent death. Give strong drink to him who is perishing and wine to those who are bitter of heart. And at times we see not just alcohol, more common today maybe even would be the very strong medicines that sometimes doctors use for people who are experiencing deep pain or experiencing deep emotional issues, or maybe as we've already heard about today, people who have gone through some surgeries and they use medicines to help people to be able to endure the pain of that so that they can recover and get the treatment that they need. If such a person were to survive the circumstances that are described here, one who is about to perish, one who is bitter of heart, then all of the other warnings in the Proverbs about alcohol and other drugs would apply. I didn't die. I survived. The medicine got me through it and I survived. And so now I go back to those principles of exercising restraint and being concerned about justice and the law and being careful to recognize that alcohol and other drugs can inhibit that thinking and that thought process. A third warning here we'll talk about just briefly is the need to commit to impartial judgment. And obviously, if you think about the fact that Lemuel is described as a king, then we can understand why the mother might say something along these lines. His responsibilities would be to execute the law, and she wanted her son to be a virtuous son, a virtuous king, a king that recognized justice and spoke for those who had no voice, so to speak, there in verse 8. Open your mouth for the speechless and the cause of all who are appointed to die. open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy. We can see how this would apply to someone who was serving as a king, but I also believe that this is pretty good advice for anybody trying to serve God at any time and in any position, to be committed to impartial judgment. One reason I would say that is I think we've probably seen this, we see it in the Scriptures, and maybe we've seen it through experience in our own lives. Favoritism erodes trust. And we cannot lead people or influence them for good in any capacity if we don't have their trust. Leadership is about trust. I'm in this position. I have authority. If people won't trust me and people won't follow me, all I've got is a title. I can't use my position for any good if people don't trust me. And so if we could kind of summarize what the mother of Lemuel has said up to this point, avoid the pitfall of becoming successful and then using your blessings that God has given you to gratify your flesh. Treat people fairly. Deal with them in kindness and in love. And then finally, the kind of moving into the next part of the chapter, you know, she introduces a fourth point of advice, I think, just a little bit different maybe from the general admonition to avoid unrestrained lust and to be someone who gratifies their lust without control, to now specifically talking about the importance of a godly wife. And she spends the most time talking about this need. And so maybe we can learn something just from that fact alone that, hey, you know, this is dangerous. You know, living by unrestrained lust can have all kinds of unintended consequences. Alcohol is dangerous. And surely favoritism and being partial in our judgments, it's not going to yield the consequences we want. But maybe there's an emphasis on this need right here, because maybe it can be as far-reaching, so far as maybe reaching into so many different corners of our social relationships, and the consequences of not being careful can be long-lasting. Now, I will say this, that kings can be kings without a wife, and we can have a lot of good influence as a single person. But I suspect that King Lemuel's mother is speaking from the perspective that most people will probably be interested in marriage. Most people would probably be interested in marriage. A king would probably be expected to take a wife. And so she's going to give him some instructions about how to ready himself. How to ready himself. You know, don't be a drunkard. Don't live for lust. Don't be someone who shows partial judgments. But then also maybe how to help him to train himself to be attracted to the right kind of person, the kind of person that's going to help him. Let's read verses 10 through 12. She says, "Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life." Now, I will just make this observation, and if you've studied the Proverbs before, I'm sure maybe some students of the Hebrew language, if in a workbook or maybe even the teacher of the class, has brought out the fact that beginning in verse 10 here, we have an acrostic poem in the Hebrew language, which, if I understand that correctly, basically just means that each line begins with a letter of the Hebrew alphabet in succession. If we could just translate that to English, it would be like A, B, C. So the first line starts with A, the second line starts with B, and the third line starts with C, and so forth and so forth. I think we kind of get the gist. Not much comment to make on that, just an observation of a poetic style that, you know, just fits into sometimes inspiration. And by inspiration, I mean sometimes, you know, poets looking for places to start so far as ideas are concerned. And you know, an acrostic poem in particular might have served as a good memory device. You kind of begin to learn this alphabetically. You put these lines in order and these attributes in order. What we're going to do for the most part, for the rest of our time, is to consider the content of verses 10 through 31 and look at three major categories: spiritual work, domestic work, and financial work. So let's talk about spiritual work first, because I really believe that that's where King Lemuel's mother begins. She's talking about a virtuous wife. And I believe that it is evident from the very beginning of this poem that begins in verse 10 that her greatest value is her virtue. Why would I say that? Well, I think we're probably familiar with the content of Proverbs 31. We know what kind of woman is described here. It's a hard-working woman. And the fruits of her labor would be a blessing from God for the family. But notice how she's described. She is worth more than rubies. She herself is worth more than stuff. What her virtue is worth is far more valuable than what her labor produces. And I believe what we're talking about here is her virtue, is her character, is her faith and her devotion to God. And she is described as a wife who always does her husband good all the days of her life. And the husband is described in verse 11 as a man who safely trusts her. Because of her consistent virtue and her devotion to God, the relationship and the life of her husband becomes a life such that he puts his trust in his wife and he never has to worry about her disappointing him. Because she's devoted to the Lord. She is surely going to need to grow herself and maybe even stumble and make a mistake, but she's devoted to the Lord and he knows that she's going to stand up and continue to march toward the Lord, to march toward eternity, and so he can safely trust in her. And that's not a small thing. There are a lot of people in the world, and you know, we're talking about wives because, well, that's who the chapter talks about. That's who Lemuel's mother talks about, the virtuous wife. But these principles are interchangeable. We could say the same things about women looking for husbands. There are a lot of people in the world who are hardworking and they're good at making money. But I think we know and we have seen that we would be very foolish to put our trust in them. Because they're not devoted to God. Maybe they're devoted to themselves. Maybe what drives them is a love of money. That's why they're so hardworking. Because they love money and they love things. She is virtuous because she fears the Lord. Verse 30 says, "Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised." I believe that there is trust in the whole family unit that we can see. We see a husband who trusts his wife. And then we see in verse 28 a husband who praises his wife because she is virtuous, because she fears the Lord. And we see children that are affected by this trust and this security and this stability. And it is all a product of the husband and the wife looking to the Lord together, I believe. She does her husband good. He praises her. Difficulty in marriages is sometimes blamed on incompatibility. But the real problem is often just a failure to put God first. Covetousness. We argue and we fight about money and about money goals because we are focused only on getting more stuff. And our pursuit, our value, the way we value our lives and ourselves is based on the amount of money in the bank. What about unfaithfulness? Disloyalty to the vows that we have made. Where does that come from? People get discontent in their lives and discontent with, because of course they're seeking their own and not seeking to serve their husbands or their wives and their children. They get discontent, maybe even they get depressed, and they go looking for consolation in the arms of another. Some new flavor of the month. That's very selfish thinking. When the difficult times come, and they will come, peace and trust will be far more valuable than money. Because sometimes that's what the difficult thing is. So we don't have any money. What are we going to do? Well, I don't know. We're together. And we're going to trust the Lord. And we're going to get through this together. See, that's a situation where a lot of people say, "Phew, you're weighing me down. We don't have any money. And, you know, the idea of us trying to make it together, that's scary. That seems hard. I'm going to go try and make it on my own." She is known for wisdom and kindness. I think this is related to her spiritual work and her spiritual character. In verse 20, she is described as one who takes care of the poor and needy. Verse 26, she is one who opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. The virtuous wife works hard, accomplishes a lot of things, and yet she still has the patience and the willingness to serve others and to be kind. We're not just talking about someone who is friendly, I think. We're talking about someone whose tongue, on her tongue is the law of kindness. And she opens her mouth with wisdom. I think we're talking about the kind of person that maybe others would look to in a time of need for advice, for counsel. Here, we're going through this situation. You know, me and my wife are going through this trial. And we look to the virtuous wife and her family. And we say, and we ask her, have you ever been in a situation like this? How did you and your family get through it? Help me to understand what I'm dealing with here. Help me to deal with these feelings. Help me to recapture my trust in the Lord, that the Lord will bring me through. That's the kind of woman that I think we're talking about. Someone that you want involved when you're going through difficult or important times. She's a virtuous wife who fears the Lord, and she is willing to serve, available to serve, and she has demonstrated herself to be wise. Well, let's talk for just a moment about her domestic work. The virtuous wife works hard. I think we're pretty familiar with that aspect of this passage for sure. She is described in verse 14 as working willingly with her hands. I'm sorry, verse 13. In verse 14, she's like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. And maybe a couple of ideas in there. The idea of, you know, getting the best value for what she's looking for her family. The merchant ships, bringing goods from afar, the best goods, and maybe at the best price. She gets up early in verse 15. She rises while it's still night. She stays up late in verse 18. Her lamp does not go out by night. She makes sure in verse 15 that everyone in her house is provided for. Why is she getting up? To make sure that there's food for the household, for them to get their day started. In verse 16, she wisely invests the family's profits. She considers a field and buys it. From the fruit of her own hands or from her profits, she plants a vineyard. This is you know, money that has been produced by some of her work and some of her skills. In verse 21, she makes sure that everyone in her house is dressed. She's not afraid of cold weather. They have the clothes that they need. Verse 22, she gives attention even to her appearance. She makes tapestry for herself, and her clothing is fine linen and purple. She makes items with her hands and sells them. In verse 24, she does not eat the bread of idleness in verse 27. We're talking about, we're talking about someone who works hard. And a lot of that work is focused on taking care of that family. In verse 29, many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. You're the best of the best. I want you to think about something with me for just a moment. It's not a competition, but I think the world can make it feel that way sometimes. I think there's a lot of pressure on our women, maybe even more so pressure on our women than on our men. Pressure to fit into an impossible mold, to live up to an impossible standard. First of all, I hope that we, as we look at young women and women at whatever stage they may be in their life, as we look at this chapter, we realize what this chapter is talking about is a lifetime of work. Not a single day, not a single week. I don't want any Christian woman looking at this list and thinking, you mean I've got to do all of this in a day? And I've got to keep a perfect house? And I've got to stay in shape too? There's so many messages through images, on television, and advertisements, through social media, that our women just aren't good enough. And so much of that messaging, I believe, is unfair. Sometimes, you know, you're shown pictures of women and clothing that is for women who, you know, nobody's that tall. Nobody's that thin. No normal person who has any work to do during the day, who can't afford $1,000 a week for a personal trainer, but yet sometimes I think the pressure, our women feel the pressure. Oh, that's what I've got to be. At certain times in our lives, at least this is just my opinion from what I've seen, at certain times in our lives, I just don't even know if it's possible to keep all those balls up in the air. I'm just keeping it all going. I just don't think it's possible. And I hope that we would be careful not to contribute to the pressure that our wives feel, either as husbands or as brethren in general, telling our wives and the women that they're not enough. Let me just say this to our ladies. Don't let the world bully you. Don't let them tell you that you're not enough. You consider and learn and discover your abilities. You love your family, and you be a servant, and know that God is pleased with that, and that God loves you. I would also maybe offer this warning. Don't buy into the world's praise. The world will tell you, oh, you're just what we've been looking for. You meet all of our criteria. Well, even if we met all of the world's criteria, that doesn't mean that we have pleased God. And so we need to make sure that our focus is on that. One of the best defenses against the pressure that our wives face is the praise of thankful husbands and children. You know, I use those words in verse 29 to talk about the pressure that women face in our world. But I really believe in verse 29, that is what the husband is saying. And we would expect the husband to say, nobody's better than you, right? This is what this man is saying. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. And husbands, we need to be busy praising our wives, telling them, no one is better than you for me. The success of wives is determined by each woman's unique abilities, her family's needs, and her family's contentment. And we need to make sure that we are not looking into people's lives without all the information and seeking to be critical and tear women down. In verse 31, it says, give her of the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her. She's not to be judged by some standard over here of some supposed perfect woman or some woman over here who's at a completely different position in her life and different time in her life. Why can't you be like her? That's not where I am. That's not what's going on in my life. She will be praised on the basis of her works, and her family's needs and her family's contentment will be the measure of that success in view of what God has said about her. So ladies, be honest about your abilities. Work hard because you fear the Lord, but also be content. Be content. And the rest of us need to really make sure that we focus on encouraging our women, encouraging our wives, and let go of unrealistic expectations. For just a moment, let's talk about the financial work of the virtuous wife. I think the chapter has quite a few things to say about that. The first thing we might say is that the virtuous wife is a financial partner with her husband. Look at what it says about him. He safely trusts her. He is right to trust her, and he will have no lack of gain because of his trust in her. Husbands can't have the kind of trust that is described in Proverbs 31 if a wife is wasting the family substance and not being careful with money and not being part of a family plan and working to make sure that the family plan for money is being carried out. Money is uncertain enough as it is. It's all the more uncertain when it's not managed. And so the husband and the wife must execute the family's plan for money together. Both must know the plan for money. Both must follow the plan for money. And we're not talking about trusting in money here, but I will bring to your attention the fact that money problems are always listed as one of the top three causes of divorce. Because what happens sometimes is you've got either people who are only seeking their own interest, and so this one's spending money as fast as they can, and this one's spending money as fast as they can, and they get tired of sharing money, and they say, I'd like to just have my own money and spend my own money. Because debt and other things can be stressful. Money problems can be very stressful. And if you've got one person over here trying to follow a money plan, and you've got a person over here who doesn't know the plan and refuses to follow the plan, that's going to lead to stress and tension. And a lot of people in the world get divorces because of things like that. And so there needs to be communication about money. Encouraging one another, because sometimes partners, one partner will struggle maybe with discontentment. Or one partner will struggle with security, and you have to encourage one another to continue to look to God, to continue to trust the plan. We know that we don't want to become frivolous spenders. Money is uncertain enough as it is. We don't want to start being careless with it. And through that, perhaps we can teach our children to learn how to be good stewards of money as well. In verse 16, she considers a field and buys it. She's part of the plan. She knows about fields, she knows about vineyards, and she is trusted to be a part of that plan and to make decisions that are going to help and enhance the family's security. In verses 16, talks about her buying this field, buying this vineyard from her own profits. In verse 18, she is making merchandise, and she is a skilled, whatever it is she's producing, she's skilled in it. She knows that it's good. She's well known in verse 24 to the merchants because her linen garments and her sashes are high quality and valuable. She produces income. To what extent does she take this? Well, I think this will depend a lot on her unique abilities and the needs of her family. Now, there's obviously an emphasis on domestic work in the Bible, and there are a lot of ways to produce income besides just getting a job outside of the home, but it may be necessary for some wives to work, or it may be best for the family in some situations for wives to work. And in that situation, we need to be very careful that we don't make them feel embarrassed or ashamed. If they're taking care of their spiritual work and they're doing what they need to do domestically and they're a part of this money plan in this way, I think sometimes what happens is there's a lot of pressure on ladies because if you were a real wife. Sometimes it's necessary and sometimes it may be what's best for the family. Now the truth is we don't want anybody, men or women, making this choice for their family for the hope of maybe more material things and neglecting anything, in particular the training of the children. Both parents have to make sure that the spiritual needs of the children are being met. And sometimes what we do, and we see this in people all the time, we see people taking some of those financial hopes and some of those things that might be pleasurable or enjoyable, and we put those off. And we focus on what's most important for the moment until our children are grown. But still, at the same time, if people are in this situation, we need to recognize that this is part of how a virtuous wife contributes to the security of her family without making her feel guilty or ashamed. We're not surprised, having spent the first part of the lesson talking about her spiritual character, we're not surprised to learn that she's a giver. You notice in verse 15, she's taking care of the people of her household. In verse 20, she's taking care of the poor and the needy. In verse 21, she's making sure that everyone has clothes. In verse 22, she takes care of herself and does some things for herself, but after everybody else has been tended to and made sure that there were needs, the needs of the family are met. The virtuous wife is not going to be dominated by covetousness because she trusts the Lord. She's not going to neglect the poor or the needy because she knows that this is one of the primary reasons that God blesses us. Notice what it says in verse 23. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. The husband is known, and because of her work, is free to be involved in the community and to be in the position in the community to be influential. But I would say that probably the whole family is known. In verse 31, she's known. Let her own works praise her in the gates. People know what she does. People know who she is. Nobody in this family is seeking to be known for the sake of being known, but because of their mutual faith, their trust in God, they have an influence for good in the community. But let me just say, you can't have that without a virtuous wife. It is such an important part of our effectiveness in our families. And that's what Lemuel's mother wanted him to know. Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Attractive people who are living for lust, they're easy to find. They're everywhere. But what we get from those relationships won't last. The virtuous wife is a valuable treasure whose value only increases over time. When we think about the potential for good, we're not just thinking about the potential for good. When we think about good, what we're talking about hopefully ultimately is spiritual good. That our children can be in the best position, if we have children, to know the Lord and to serve the Lord. That we can be in the best position to, have the most influence for good as a member of a local church. All that is enhanced and made possible by being attracted to the right kind of things and developing the right kind of qualities within ourselves. So, things to be praying about. Things to be studying. Things to be learning in ourselves to develop and to be attracted to. And don't forget to thank God for all the virtuous women who are in our lives, because God said they are worthy to be praised. I think a song has been selected by way of invitation. Is that right, number 280, Nicholas? All right, go ahead and open your songbook to number 280. So thankful for the opportunity. Thank you for inviting me. I hope that what we've considered together has been helpful to you. What the family does, ultimately, I think, as we look in the New Testament, is it helps us to learn about the love of God for us. It helps us to find ourselves in a position where we are willing, because of our love for another, we're willing to put ourselves in harm's way. We're willing to sacrifice so that the people that we love the most can have the things that they need. And that's exactly what God did for us when He sent Jesus to die for our sins. If you're here this evening and you need to respond to the gospel, if you're willing to confess Jesus as your Lord and repent of your sins, you can be baptized in His name and experience the love of God and forgiveness and have the hope of eternity. If you need to come, we hope that you will. We're going to sing a song.